I love saying that we have an international guest this episode. It makes me feel like such a big deal. Yay! No one really cares about the guy on the bottom. No one really cares about the guy beneath. And everybody wants to be down with the dude on top of the stairs. Top of the stairs. Cause no one really cares about the guy on the bottom. No one really cares about the guy beneath. And everybody wants to be down with the dude on top of the stairs. Top of the stairs. Little brother, look around. Hey guys, this is the Rare is Fundamental Podcast, episode 91, recorded June 4th, 2018. Right now it's June 6th, 2018, so this interview was done 2 days before today. My guest for this episode is not a big deal here, but a pretty big deal in the Philippines. Stan C, radio DJ for Wave 89.1 FM in Manila. He's also done some TV work, some voiceover work. He's also a manager in a wrestling organization called Philippine Wrestling Revolution, PWR. So yeah, he does a lot of things in the Philippines, and we're gonna talk about a lot of things. We're gonna talk about wrestling. We're gonna talk about storytelling, not just in wrestling, but just in general, basically storytelling. Get it right. Know how to make a coherent story without losing your people, right? Also going to talk a little bit about Game 2 of the NBA Finals. Obviously, we're Filipinos, so of course, we love our basketball, right? And also, we're going to talk about his trip here in America. He visited here last year, and we actually hung out and watched a wrestling pay-per-view, and he actually tried In-N-Out Burger for the first time, so we'll get his thoughts on that. And so much more! Here's Stan C.
It's Kristen Ledlow from NBA Inside Stuff, and I was once on the Ray Reyes Fundamental Podcast. Once. That was enough.
Ray Reyes Fundamental Podcast, episode 91. 91 was a good year. It was so long ago. My guest! DJ for Wave 89.1 FM in the Philippines, also involved with PWR, Philippine Wrestling Revolution, and Multisport Philippines as well. You have a lot of jobs going on. Stan C, how's it going?
Hey, so good to be back. I think the last time we did this was, 4 years ago? And yeah, dude, I try to juggle a lot of hats, kind of like you do. I mean, like, I think it's a current generation thing.
Yeah, I mean, who cares about, like, just one job, right? We just do, like, all these things, the internet generation, basically. So, yeah, back then when we did this, it was still called The Chronicles of Crotty, named after backup point guard John Crotty. No one really knows that anymore because that's so long ago now.
No, that's a story that's hard to forget. Like, I still remember it very vividly, so.
Yeah, that's good, yeah. I feel bad because I just mentioned, like, John Crotty's name for the first time in, like, years, and, like, I should have him back on the podcast soon. Anyway, the funny thing is that we were supposed to do this months ago.
Yes.
And, things happened, but we should talk about us hanging out last year, actually.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been over a year since that happened, and you know what? I mean, like, for all of the good things that happened that night, like, the one thing that sticks out is the fact that the one pay-per-view we caught together was an absolutely horrible one.
Not only horrible when it comes to quality, but also horrible when it comes to, like, the feed.
Yeah.
The feed was awful. Like, it was going on, it was great for like 2 hours, and suddenly, like, by the time we get to, like, the last few matches, it's just started, like, yeah. Technology is horrible.
So here I am, right? I'm some guy from a third world country, and I go to the States, right? Land of milk and honey, expecting high class internet. And then I come in there and I watch. and we tune into the WWE Network, and the feed is all messed up, and I'm like, I'm not sure if I'm still in the Philippines.
Well, you were in a Filipino household. Does that count?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, right. So, is that your first time in America, right? Like,
No. Been in, yeah. So that was my third time. I was first there in 98, and then again in 06, and then last year. So, I've been there 3 times.
Wow. But that's a huge gap, though. Like, 11 years beforehand.
Yeah, dude. So. I really don't know why. I mean, like, I'd like to think it's also, like, a budget thing because we travel as a family. So it's not like we can just go there every year, right? But then again, like, we also do hang out with family. We live with family when we're there. So that really helps us a lot in terms of budgeting the trip and all that. It's just that so many things happen in between. So, you know, scheduling a trip to the U.S. doesn't happen as often as we'd like.
Mm-hmm. So while we were hanging out, you also had In-N-Out Burger for the first time. So how did you like that?
Dude, you know what? So it was really built up to me, it's like whenever I told friends now, oh, I know what, I'm going to go to the States. I'm going to go hang out with friends and family. They're like, yeah, try In-N-Out. Try In-N-Out is like at the top of the list, right? So when we hung out, I think it was day three or day four of my trip. So I was really craving In-N-Out. So we go there and like on one hand, I'm like, yeah, you know what? This burger is actually pretty good. But on the other hand, the place we hung out at was cold as hell. So I was freezing my ass off and trying to enjoy the burger with my bare hands. And I realized I had to put my gloves on because it was just too damn cold. And I was trying to enjoy the burger. And I don't know, like, I'm pretty sure that the fact that we were outdoors at like 9 p.m. really didn't help things. But for what it's worth, I'd like to think I enjoyed it.
Well, that's really weird because it's Southern California, not exactly known for being cold. And here you are talking about how cold it was in Southern California at 9 p.m. Like, that's really weird to me. It's not like I was also, like, bundled up or anything. Like,
no, you have to understand that I come from a very tropical place, right? So, like, the average temp in the Philippines is, like, 32 degrees Celsius. So I'm not sure how that converts to Fahrenheit. But you know, like, I'm used to just hanging out in a t-shirt and shorts. So like, that's my normal, that's my normal everyday attire, or a t-shirt and jeans, right? And even then, I'm already sweating buckets. But you know, I go to the States, and like, that was March 2017. The first week of March was really cold for me. So like, I was bundled up. I would wear 3-4 layers. I would have gloves on. I would wear a beanie if I had to. So like, it was pretty cold that first week.
Wow, I didn't know it was that cold for you. Then again, I can't say anything because, like, I haven't been to the Philippines since, oh my god, 1989. So I don't even know how tropical weather feels anymore. Basically,
no, global warming, man, and climate change—it just really heats things up much faster. So, like, once the AC is off, within 30 minutes, you're back to sweating buckets. So,
So is In-N-Out better than any of the burgers in the Philippines? I don't know what's still there in the Philippines anymore. Obviously, Jollibee's still there.
Yeah, you got McDonald's over here. You got Burger King.
McDonald's.
Yeah, you have these other fast food places and local burger chains. In terms of how it fills me up, I'd like to think In-N-Out is up there. There's this one burger place locally called Zark's, and their themes are basketball and wrestling related. So the first time I ate there, I popped the hell out of their menu. So like, they have a burger called the Tombstone. They've got a burger called the Stone Cold Stunner. You know, you have all these burgers with all these NBA and WWE references. So I would like to think that In-N-Out and Zark's are in the god tier of my burger rankings.
Okay, cool. Oh, so this is really old. I'm showing my age here. But back in the day, WCW, right, still existing.
Yeah.
They had something called the Nitro Grill in Las Vegas. I don't know if you remember that at all.
Well, I remember the Girls, but not the Nitro Girl in Las Vegas, whoever she was.
The Nitro Grill, yeah.
Oh, sorry, the Nitro Grill. My bad.
Yeah. But it was in Las Vegas. Like, I think we went there around 1999, right? By that time, WCW was awful. So me and my friends went there. We were like the only people that were in the restaurant, basically.
Oh, that's
and like
sad.
A couple of workers. That's it. It was that bad. But anyway, like, the menu had something like Big Papa Burger and Gold Burger and the Hollywood Burger. And all you see is like footage of, like, you know, reruns of Nitro all around the place. But the place was so empty. The burgers, I don't know, nothing home to write about. But yeah, it wasn't the greatest place to eat at the time. So that's my wrestling restaurant themed story, I guess.
No, it's funny that you bring that up because a few years ago there was an NBA cafe locally at one of the big malls down in Bonifacio Global City. So it's one of the developed metropolis areas, if you'd like to call that. So they had this NBA cafe, which was actually licensed by the NBA. And then for a while, whenever they'd have NBA players come in, the press conferences, the event launches, and all that stuff would be held at the NBA cafe. So like, everything would be decorated with jerseys, signed memorabilia, all that good stuff. But the menu had nothing to do with the league, nothing to do about basketball. And you'd eat it and you'd be like, this is just overpriced food that isn't really all that good. So like, the only reason I ever had to go to the NBA cafe was to attend these press conferences and stuff. And like, a few years later, it just disappeared. Like, I guess it ran out of business. So now it's gone. And you know, it's funny, you know, we're just talking about these restaurants that are so heavily reliant on the branding of whatever institution, and they don't really last all that long.
Yeah, and Nitro Girl died because, well, WCW died, so, you know, that's part of it too. But who was like the most well-known basketball player that went to the NBA Cafe? Like,
I remember attending a press conference for Allen Iverson. He was here along with some street ballers. Like, I know the professor was part of that group.
Okay.
Yeah, so I'm forgetting his real name, but I'm sure you know who the professor is, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, from the End One mixtapes. So there was that, and then there was that one year when they brought in a bunch of young guys at the time. So you had Damian Lillard, Kawhi Leonard, DeMar DeRozan was there. I think James Harden was there. It was this huge event that they billed as like the big preparation game for the Philippine team versus these NBA players, these up and coming young studs, right? And a few days pass, and then the NBA comes down on these guys and says you can't play because it wasn't an NBA licensed event. So what ends up happening is it becomes a glorified practice scrimmage, like it's literally a scrimmage for 10,000 people to watch. It was so weird. It was so messed up. People were so pissed. And I remember driving for my radio show, hoping to catch the game, right? And just watching a glorified scrimmage. And I was like, this is a huge PR fiasco.
Yeah. It's so weird because I was talking about like, with people off the record about how like we had to get in contact with certain people, just to talk to them on a podcast, right? Like I'm friends with, you already know I'm friends with certain people.
Sure, that
are celebrities, right? And I just think it's so weird that while we keep in touch like nearly every day, whether it's phone or social media or whatever, it's so weird we have to do that. We have to go through PR departments just to talk to them on a podcast. Like the things that we talk about off the record anyway. Like it's so weird to me.
No, I mean, I think I kind of get where they're coming from in the sense that the podcast is always out there, right? Like, once it's out there, it's out there. It's for public consumption. Yeah. It's considered on the record, even though you say, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, this is off the record, right? So, like, I could go on here and talk to you about controversial things, and once it gets back to me, it's traced to my name, and, you know, that's when ish hits the fan.
Yeah, I get that too. I mean, I totally get it. I just think it's weird. That's all. You know, it's like, well, people already know I've been friends with so-and-so for years now. And our friendship is out there. It's not like we're going to talk about like, oh, let's talk about this controversial. No, and everyone knows my style. It's not controversial. So, I don't know. It's just weird to me. So.
No, I feel you. I totally understand that. You know, it just makes things much harder. And like, you and I know this. We've been podcasting for years. So, like, I totally feel you.
You've been in and out of radio gigs the last few years. So, what's so different about this one now in Wave 89.1? Just let me know what's up.
Yeah. You know, so like I've been in the business for like 8 years or so. I love saying this. Like I've been in the business. I've been in the industry. It kind of legitimizes like the things you've been doing, right? So like I've been in the I've been in radio for like about 8 years up to this point, and I was with my first station, Mellow, which you know you listened to for quite a while, for almost 7 years. And at the time that I left, I decided that you know it was time to step out of my comfort zone. At the same time, there were some things going on that weren't really aligned with what I'd wanted to do eventually. So I was just like, you know what? It's time for a change of pace. So I took a sabbatical, went around and traveled, and I found this other station, you know, that was looking for male DJs called Home Radio. And at the time, they were playing pop music, like way before the music would even hit Billboard, they would already have it in circulation. So I was like, hey, you know what?
Right.
This is pretty good. It's nice to be among the first to play a new song for a change. Like I think before Congratulations by Post Malone was a thing, we were already playing that stuff. So. I had a head start on Congratulations. And then, like about a month in, I went on a trip to Cambodia and then I came back, right? I came back on a Monday and then suddenly from playing Post Malone and Drake and Ariana Grande and Katy Perry, we started playing Air Supply and Chicago and Michael Learns to Rock. And like, don't get me wrong, I love those artists. I have them on a Spotify playlist. I listen to their songs. I can sing a lot of them too, but like, that's not the type of stuff I'd like to hear on a regular basis. So I go up to management and I ask, hey, what happened? And they said, oh yeah, you know what? Over the weekend, we decided to reformat. There was a change in leadership. So now we're going to try to target a different demographic. So we're going to be playing older stuff, easy listening stuff. And we go as far back as the 50s now. And I'm like, hold up. Hold the phone. This is not what I signed up for. And to make matters worse, you know what? They were like, you know what? You can think of a new spin to your show. La, la, la. And I asked them, all right, but when do I get to talk again? So I would have a timeline, right, of how to fix my show and all that. And they tell me, how about you give us like 2 weeks and then we'll decide when you can turn the mics on again. So for now, just sit in that chair and load songs. And I'm like, dude, if I'm going to be here for 4 hours, I can load a 4 hour playlist in about an hour. What the hell am I going to do for the next 3 hours?
Yeah, yeah.
So I wasn't really fond of that. So I went to management and I said, you know what? It's probably best that we go our separate ways. No hard feelings. You know, thanks for being transparent with me. And, you know, this is me being fair and transparent to you. So we went our separate ways, took a break for another 2 months. And then I have a friend from PWR, from Philippine Wrestling Revolution. Shout out to Chino Ginto, who found the ad for Wave looking for a newscaster. He sends it my way, and I see that there was a requirement for like a 15-minute sample. And I read that line, and I'm like, who the hell asks for a 15-minute sample? That's long. That's incredibly long. So the way I work is I try to work efficiently, and I try to game the system. So instead of recording myself flapping my gums for 15 minutes straight, I recorded 15 news bits of 1 minute each.
Yeah, yeah.
So I had a 15-minute sample, which was made up of 15 one-minuters. I sent it their way, and I get a call about a week later. And then I come in, do an interview, do a sample radio show at like 4 in the morning. And then, you know, it just spiraled from there. I got hired. I did the morning show for about half a year. That wasn't my favorite time in my career either, just because, you know, I'm having to wake up at an ungodly hour, like before 4 a.m. And, you know, having really no one to talk to other than your partner for 2 hours before people actually give a crap. Not the best feeling in the world. So eventually they moved me to my current time slot at 7 p.m. I got a new partner, my mentor. Her name's Chloe. I'd known her since I started in radio in 2010. So from then on, it's been much easier, much more fun. Like, I get to be more creative with my radio elements. Like, if you get to listen to the show, it's on 7 p.m. Manila time. So West Coast time, that should be like 4 a.m. So if ever you're awake at that time, you'd actually hear me drop these little sound bites. I have a soundboard where I have Ron Simmons yelling damn, I have the WWE Universe chanting you look stupid, or the yes chants, or the suck it chants. Like, I really try to put a lot of myself into the show now that I have a little bit more creativity on my side.
Yeah, and it seems like radio DJs are, it feels like it's getting harder and harder to like stick with them, because like everyone's on podcasts now and everyone's on YouTube or whatever. And sometimes like who listens to the radio these days, right? That sort of thing. So isn't it hard to like kind of keep this going?
Yeah, it is. It is, in the sense that I talk to my friends and they're like, oh, what station are you with now? And I'm like, oh yeah, I'm with Wave. And they're like, yeah, you know what? That's cool. But I only listen to Spotify now. So for them to tell you that to your face, I'm not sure if they actually realize it's a low key slap to the face. But like, you know, it's cool. I've heard that line so many times over the years, so I've kind of gotten used to it. But like, on my end, I also understand where they come from, because I come from a place where I used to be so critical of other DJs. Like, I would listen to every radio station I would like whenever I'm driving. And Manila traffic is very similar to LA traffic. Like, the average commute is like an hour, more or less. So you have a lot of time to listen to whatever, right? And I would listen to whatever station and try to listen to my friends or listen to their coworkers, and I would always find something to nitpick. And at some point, it just hit me that it was really stressful and not very healthy for me emotionally and mentally to just nitpick every station and think that, you know what, you know, I'm better than this DJ, or I can do it so much better. it just really made me sick, because, like, one, it inflated my ego, and at the same time, it just really made me lose my love for the industry. So that's when I started listening to podcasts more often, and whenever I drive now, I just turn on a podcast. I barely listen to the radio now, just because I have to switch off that part of my brain that forces me to critique everything I hear, from the elements to the use of words, the diction, and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm. So you hear that it's healthy to listen to Ray Ray is fundamental.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
This is Shay Serrano, and you are listening to the Ray Ray is Fundamental podcast. I think Ray Ray should change the name of the podcast, but he likes it, so that's what you're listening to.
Let's talk about your involvement with PWR. So I know, thanks for the t-shirts, by the way. Thanks for giving me and TJ t-shirts. So how did that all get started?
All right. So everything really started from the podcast. Like, I have my own podcast, cheap plug.
Yeah.
It's called the Smart Gilas Pilipinas, or the SGP podcast. So it's a pro wrestling podcast made by Filipino fans for Filipino fans. That's always been the vision. And it was a podcast that, had things gone my dad's way, would have been up, 6 years ago, like in 2012. He'd been bugging me since then to start a podcast. So shout out to my dad who actually pushed me in this direction. And it didn't take me until 2014 to actually sit down in the booth and start that podcast at Mellow, the old station I worked for. So we were doing the podcast and we were gaining some sort of notoriety among the local fan base because, oh, hey, there's a Filipino wrestling podcast. You know, these guys speak in Filipino. They drop Filipino pop culture references and they talk about wrestling from a Filipino standpoint. So let's check that out. And eventually it got to PWR, or Philippine Wrestling Revolution, which was in its infancy at the time. So, you know, they started contacting us asking if we could guest on their podcast. And at the time, we were still trying to figure out how to present Philippine wrestling on the podcast. So for a while, we were a vehicle for their storylines to be carried. Like, you know, they would come on in kayfabe. It would be really weird and really awkward, especially the guys who didn't really know how to work the mic yet at the time. And then after a couple of interviews, I sat down with management at the time and they said, hey, how would you like to be involved in an on-camera role? And I was like, all right, what are we talking here? Because I, you know, I'm not exactly keen on getting in the ring and getting beat up. So they said, we're looking for a general manager and we think you can fit the bill. And I'm like, do I get to, you know, wear a suit and come out to you know, my own entrance music? And they're like, yes and yes. And I'm like, sign me up. So, you know, I debuted in December of 2014. It was the second show. And I came out to like 300 people in a very dingy, dingy arena that no longer exists. People here say that the old arena where PWR performed in, it was called the Makati Square Arena. It had this 90s ECW feel. Like some people, some of the hipster people, the hipster crowd who were there would even call it like an underground fight club feel.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's how they describe it. So, you know, that's how I got my start. You know, I was the babyface authority figure. I would come out there. You know, I would do the Teddy Long stuff, like, we're going to have a tag team match right now. And the funny thing about doing these things, and when you're a smart, as I'm sure you'll be able to relate with, is you have all these I'm trying to look for the word. I'm not sure if motive is the right word, but like, you have all these examples from years past and these other authority figures you can look at, and now I just reference them in such a tongue-in-cheek manner. So for some people it flies over their head, but for the people who get it, they pop extra hard because they know I'm doing it in a tongue-in-cheek manner. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. It does. Yeah, it does.
Yeah, so I'm doing that in such a snarky manner, right? And eventually, you know, I got myself fired, and then I got myself rehired, and people would tell me, you know what, you really set the standard for a local authority figure in the Philippines, which to me is one of the biggest compliments they've ever sent my way. Because all I ever really wanted to do was go out there and cut a promo. Like, I never had it in me to take a bump, much less, you know, be involved physically and, like, you know, start diving over the top rope and all that good stuff. But yeah, now my current role is I'm the manager for Main Max, who bills himself as the ultimate hybrid. So he's a big dude, about 6 feet tall, and he weighs about 260, 270, really athletic, kind of like a Filipino version of Kevin Owens. And personality wise, he doesn't really know how to project himself because he's not a naturally charismatic guy. He's a very low profile dude. Like, he can easily get lost in the background despite his size. So my job is obviously to build him up, to get that personality out of him, to fight his battles on the mic for him. And then when things get rough, that's when I hide behind him, even though we're both baby faces, if that makes sense.
Right. You mentioned diving over the top rope, and well, you've showed me a couple of clips of you diving from the top rope.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so like, both times those happened, I never really took it seriously because I thought they were just ribbing me. So, you know, whenever we'd sit down and prepare and discuss, okay, what are we going to do? What are my cues? Because I have to know what my cues are so I don't miss a spot, right? The first time it happened was in our own version of the Survivor Series elimination match. So locally we call it Ubusan ng Lahi. I guess it roughly translates to taking out the entire clan.
Genocide.
Yeah. So, right? So, so that was our Survivor Series equivalent, and it was something, it was a storyline I'd been wanting to do for quite some time. Like, as the babyface authority figure, I'd always wanted to be in the Steve Austin role from Survivor Series 2003, cause, that was one of the first matches that really hooked me into wrestling. So, you know, regardless of who was gonna go over in that match, I just wanted it to happen. And at the time, I'd been rehired as general manager, but I was still in this feud with John Sebastian, who in PWR, he's now the general manager. He and I have been feuding since 2016. So there's a long backstory that we could actually build on now. And he comes up to me and says, hey, how about we do the story now? You get your five guys. I get my five guys. And from then on, we built towards it. It took us 3 months to build that that Ubusan ng Lahi main event. He had his five guys. I had my five guys. And while we were all discussing what was going to go down, one of the guys on his side suggests, what if Stan jumps off the top rope? And I'm like, you guys have got to be kidding, because I'm not exactly trained, right? I mean, like, I would show up to PWR training every now and then. But I didn't know a front roll from a back roll at the time. So they're like, hey, you know what? Just come in, train a bit, learn how to do the rolls, learn how to take a back bump, maybe learn how to take a front bump, and then we'll talk about doing the top, the dive off the top rope. So I show up at training. And, you know, learning how to do a front roll was a huge challenge for me. Like, I still can't do it just because I can't get over that fear. I was raised in a very, sheltered background. Like, I was raised to avoid injury, avoid physical harm. You know, I grew up very uncoordinated. Typical Chinese nerd stereotype. Like, that's me. So I was afraid to do that. But then I figured out how to do the back roll, and I started learning the basic back bump, which is not to say that I know how to put on a match. Like, I do not, right? And I absolutely respect everyone who trains, everyone who knows how to put on a wrestling match, everyone who is an actual pro wrestler, because that stuff is hard. And the fact that I never advanced more than what I did goes to show the difference in physicality or in terms of skill between me and you know, the people who are actually in the industry as workers. So... Mm-hmm. So the day of the show comes, and they're like, are you sure you want to do this? And at that point, you know, I drank the Kool-Aid, and I was like, you know what, whatever works best for the match. And if you think that this actually lends some gravitas into it, especially given what my character had to put up with, then sure, let's do that. So, so I'm there, and, the moment my music hits, I'm scared. I'm scared as hell. I'm scared as all hell. Like, anyone who's ever been a performer at a wrestling event, when you hear your music, like, you just forget everything and you just try to hit your cues. Bam, bam, bam. I tore away my blazer like Cesaro would, revealed my t-shirt inside. And I was just waiting there, like, at ringside, and I would try to get rid of my nervousness, all the jitters, by hitting the mat hard whenever I tried to get the crowd to cheer for my team, right? Screaming a lot. My voice was shot by the end of the match. And, and by the time everyone had done all their dives, and one of my guys, Miguel Rosales, who would go on to be the last man standing on my team, started pointing at me, the arena just chanted, see, complete with the fingers up in the air, kind of like if you're doing a yes chant. And, you know, as a Daniel Bryan fan, that meant the world to me. And I was like, you know what? Screw it. Let's do this. So I take off my glasses and I slide in the ring, and I'm climbing up the turnbuckles, and the venue that we held that in, the Power Max Center, it's a theater venue. So it's really dark. So I'm up there on the top rope. Never been up the top rope before, and I'm staring into darkness. I mean, I knew there was a mass of people there, but it was really dark that I could barely make out their faces. So you can imagine how much scarier that would be if you're someone with a fear of heights, which I am. So I did the Shane McMahon sign of the cross thing at the top rope, and I shrugged, and then I just jumped off. Right. So, yeah, it wasn't exactly the best of dives. Like, if you look at it, it was really just me jumping, and my trajectory was really, really short. So, I'm not exactly proud of that now looking back. And so my girlfriend was sitting in the crowd and she was watching it all go down. And then there were these two smart asses who were seated behind her who were really giving me a lot of crap, for the way that I climbed the turnbuckles. They were like, oh, look at that guy. What a sissy. What a wuss taking his time. You know, you can see his knees are shaking. And my girlfriend's like, you idiots. This guy is not a pro wrestler. Of course he'll be scared climbing up to the top rope, right?
Yeah.
So fast forward to last month, Revolution X, which is our version of WrestleMania. Now I'm in my new role of being Main Max's manager, and he was in a tornado tag match, and I come in there, and they were discussing the match. I was like, "Hey, what's up, guys? What are we gonna do for today?" And then they were like, "Hey, Stan, how do you feel about jumping off the top rope?" And I'm like. Didn't we do this 6 months ago? And then they were like, hey, yeah. it's Revolution X. Everyone has their moment. This is your moment. And at first, again, I thought they were trolling me. You know, I thought they were just trying to rib me and all that. And then when we sat down again and had a more serious discussion about what was going to go down, they were like, okay, so at this part, we're going to point at you, Stan, and then you're going to, jump off the top rope. And I was like, oh crap, we're actually doing this. So at that point, I'm like, all right, you know what? If we're going to do this, I'm going to make sure to get it right. Like, I don't want to just jump as if I'm jumping into the pool. You know what I mean? Like, you know how some people just literally jump into the pool, right?
Right.
I want to make sure it looks closer to a crossbody this time around. So I try to figure out how to do that. I talked to one of our premier high flyers. His name is Zayden Trudeau. He's a Filipino-Canadian who is really good at 450s and Phoenix splashes and all that stuff. And he teaches me how to angle my body such that it looks better for everybody who's watching.
Yeah.
And when the moment comes, this time, you know, I had a little bit more bravado in me. I just took off my glasses, took off my red jacket, and I climbed up much faster this time. People were like, oh, wow, he knows how to scale the turnbuckles now. So, like, in my head, I'm like, I'm going to show you smart asses. So I get up there, right? And, you know, I this time the venue we performed at was more well lit than the Power Max Center. So because it was more well lit, like, my fear of heights wasn't as triggered because I knew what I was going to land onto. So I got up on the top rope and then I did my thing. And when I landed, I felt the adrenaline. I just stood up and I screamed. Uh-huh. Like, you know how it is, right? Like, you see someone like Mustafa Ali, he would do a tope, and he would just scream, and the crowd would get behind him. So, I kind of wanted to know how that would feel like, and I was just so overcome with emotion. And when I finally did it, I was like, I've done it. Much better this time around. Something I can be semi-proud of this time around.
Yeah. It kind of reminds me of, who's that guy again? Green Arrow.
Oliver Queen. Stephen Amell.
Stephen Amell, yeah. It reminded me of that, honestly.
Yeah, yeah.
He did a crossbody off the top rope, right?
Exactly, so. yes, at SummerSlam. Yeah. So, you know, I mean, I'm no Stephen Amell. Stephen Amell can actually work a match. You know, he knew how to take the heat from King Barrett and Cody Rhodes.
Right? Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, so I have a long ways to go before I get there. And some people ask me, when are you going to actually have your own match? When are you going to be featured in your own special attraction? And as much as I'm tempted to actually get in the ring and train for a match like that, there's also a part of me that kind of is scared to do that because I work in media and I'm trying to also get a TV career off the ground, right? So, like, I can't go into some random audition and say, oh, I chipped a tooth, or hey, I've got a sprained elbow, I'm going to come in a sling. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I mean, I love wrestling. I really do. But I realize I probably don't love wrestling that much. Or I don't love it enough to, risk an injury when I know that there might be this audition or that booking or that event that might come at any moment.
Mm-hmm. Well, you could probably do it once you do have a TV career established, right? Like maybe 5 years down the line, you already have your own show for 3 years or whatever, and then you could probably do a match after that, right?
Yeah, probably. Maybe. Probably, yeah. I'd like to think that, it's not like I'll ever close my doors and actually getting in the ring and being a trained wrestler, you know. It's just that there's always that that looming question at the back of my mind, especially because I know I'm not an established personality. Like, I just have a radio career. Like, if I ever want to keep hosting my events, I can't show up in a, you know, with a crutch, cause, you know, I have a bum knee or I twisted my ankle and all that. So, you know, that's really it. Like, if I didn't have this, like, if I was working a corporate job, I probably would be a bit more gung-ho about it just because I know that with a corporate job, I'd have the medical insurance to take care of me if something were to happen, or, you know, it doesn't matter if you show up with, you know, with a sling or with a cast or with a crutch when you're working an office job. It doesn't matter as much, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So there, I think that's really it. And I think this is the first time I've gone on record to actually say this. So you're getting Ray Ray's Fundamental exclusive.
I'm Andy Roman, and you're listening to the Ray Ray is Fundamental podcast.
I have Monday Night Raw in the background. See, I'm doing this podcast while Monday Night Raw is in the background. So,
oh, hey, I was watching the East Coast feed right before we went on.
So while we're on the subject, how do you like WWE so far, like, as of late? Because we complain about storylines all the time, and they got a huge contract coming up. They got a contract extension with USA, and then they have a contract with Fox for next year, and they're going to make $2 billion for 5 years in the next by 2019. So that's a lot of money that you don't even need to do house shows anymore.
Yeah, you know what? I think it's always good. You know, it's always good for the industry. But the big question is, how does it trickle down? Like, does it actually trickle down? I'm sure the big stars, like the Roman Reigns of the world and the Brock Lesnar's of the world, they're going to get some of that pie, right? But, like, the big concern from a labor standpoint is, like, will the bottom feeders of the world actually get access to that? Will it trickle down to them? So that's my question. I obviously don't know the answer to that because I'm not privy to all the details. But what I do know is that there might be plans to move SmackDown back to Friday nights. And that's not something I'm fond of. Like, I actually like my schedule where, of course, here in the Philippines, we're advanced, right? So we get Raw on Tuesday mornings, we get SmackDown on Wednesday mornings, and we get NXT on Thursday mornings. This might be an unpopular opinion, but I actually like it. Like, I like consuming my wrestling 3 days or 4 days in a row. Mm-hmm. I'm cool with that, cause I like having the next half of the week to, you know, dissociate from it and to just take a break and catch my breath before the grind resumes the next week. And this is coming from someone who always gets tired of the pay-per-views. Like, now that it's a minimum of 4 hours a show, it's tiring. I understand the fatigue, and then to put up with another 3 hours on Raw, another 2 hours of SmackDown, 1 hour of 205, 1 hour of NXT, and then if you watch New Japan, like, however much New Japan you want to watch, however much Lucha Underground or Impact you want to watch, or Ring of Honor, right, and all the other indies you want to watch, so I get it. But I'm also a creature of habit. So, like, this is coming from my standpoint, or my standpoint of having this routine that I've settled on for the last couple of years, and I like it. I hate it when people mess with my routine. So when I heard that, when I heard that Fox was going to get SmackDown Live, I was like, hey, you know what? That's probably not a bad thing. And then it was reported that they were going to move to Friday nights. I'm like, okay. So this kind of messes up my schedule, and it also messes up my schedule for the podcast. Because the problem we had with the podcast before was we'd record on Thursday nights, and at the time we'd only have Raw to work on. And now that SmackDown is the much better show with a much better talent, or at least, you know, this is, again, biased because I'm a Daniel Bryan fan, I'm a Nakamura fan, and those guys are on SmackDown. So if the same SmackDown roster stays on SmackDown and we don't get them until, say, Saturday morning in the Philippines, well, I'll have to wait another week before I can talk about them on our podcast on Thursday nights. So So that's kind of how it is a bummer for me, because I wish we could retain the same schedule with, you know, with whatever TV deal they come across.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And again, we talked about, like, how much money they're going to make now. They don't have to have house shows anymore. I'm sure they'll still have them, but really it's not as critical as it was before, because again, they're going to make $2 billion in the next 5 years. And, what about the quality of the storylines? And Raw has been, you know, we talked about how bad they've been over the past couple of years. SmackDown's been a much better show. But, you know, are they going to care much about quality of stories, quality of television? Because, like, no matter what, they're going to make the money.
Right. You're absolutely right. They are going to make the money. And, you know, whether or not they need the house shows, I think they're still going to do the house shows, because
they're still going to do it, probably, yeah.
Right. And, you know, I'm going to say this as a Chinese guy. Why say no to more money? Right? You're gonna keep making money. Yeah, people will keep paying to see WWE no matter where you go. People will keep paying. So that's not gonna stop anytime soon. And my issue with the storylines, I mean, like, I think I've begrudgingly accepted my place in the whole wrestling bubble where it doesn't matter what I think. It doesn't matter what smarkies like you and I think, cause we're not the target market anymore, man. We're not the target demographic. And as sad as it is, that's really the case. It's written for casuals. It's written for people with short attention spans who probably don't care that Elias and Bobby Roode wrestled for 3 straight weeks on Monday Night Raw, or that the tag team match between Seth and Roman and Elias and Jinder actually happened last week, right? So it's not for us anymore.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, I just want storylines to make sense. I just want it to be continuity. Like, I don't even care how long the stories are. Cause, you know, I get that. Like, they're no longer TV-14 or whatever. That's fine with me. I just want them to make sense. That's all I want in my stories. You know?
Yeah, I completely agree. I look at myself as a storyteller as well, and that's why I'm particularly critical of the way that they tell their stories. Like, I'm gonna go on a tangent point here and talk about wrestling criticism, right? Because the way that a lot of internet fans criticize is they talk about, this person botched that move, or this person should have looked this way or did that or whatever, right? Like, it's a lot of Monday morning quarterbacking. And I know how wrestlers, people in the industry, actually feel about that. And they don't like it, point blank, right? Because, like, if you're a wrestling fan who's never gotten off your couch and never taken a bump in the ring, who are you to criticize what they do in the ring? So I get that. So from my standpoint, like, I never try to criticize the moves. Mostly because I have no idea how to do a satellite DDT, or I don't know how to do a tornado DDT, or how to do a front roll for that matter. So that's not what I get into. And I think a huge problem with the way that people reject criticism is because they think it's not being directed the right way. So I think it's a problem that goes both ways. People in this, in the industry, especially locally, think that a lot of the criticism comes from the way we move, or the way wrestlers move and put on a match. But the way I see it, if you're going to try to criticize something, you have to criticize something that you can actually talk about. And in my case, it's storytelling. It's narrative.
Yeah.
Because from my perspective as an audience member, not even as a writer, and not even as someone who crafts stories, right? It's you're being fed a story. And you do have a right to say that you're not liking what you're being fed. It's kind of like going to a restaurant and ordering a steak and not liking what you've been served because it wasn't well done. Does that make sense?
It does, yeah.
Yeah, so like, I don't get this whole idea that if you're a fan, you paid, sure, you can heckle as much as you want, but keep your criticism to yourself. I don't get that. I think that's not the right way to approach things, because while I do believe that some criticism is unhealthy, I also think that criticism is necessary, at least a constructive criticism. It's necessary even though it doesn't come from a fellow practitioner. Because you never know what other people are able to see from a different point of view that you're not able to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, for example, Nia Jax, right?
Yeah.
So Alexa Bliss went on a few weeks in a row saying how much of a bully Nia is. And the story here is that Nia is the one being picked on, right?
Right.
They end that story. Cool. We move on. A couple of weeks ago, suddenly, here's Nia being a bully towards Ronda Rousey. And it's like, wait a minute. How does that make sense now? And now it's like, Alexa Bliss is right after all? Is that what it is? Like, she's the one, she's the real bully now after being picked on? Like, how did that happen overnight?
You know what? I have no idea what focus groups they have over there. I have no idea who clears these things, or if they have like a big ass storyboard where they map everything, or if they cross reference to see if it was consistent with what they wrote or what they put on the week before. I have no idea how they do things. So like, I share your frustration, man, because it's it makes you just want to fast forward through everything.
Yeah, it's bad. Like, I saw Lance Storm tweet about it. It's like, this is not making any sense. Like, come on. So yeah, that's my issue with WWE. Like, their stories don't make sense half the time. And, you know, like the whole Roman Reigns thing is like, why is he being pictured as the underdog when it's obvious what he is, right? Like,
yeah, it's messed up. Like I said, I find it frustrating. And I think that's why I'm a huge fan of Lucha Underground. Like, I don't know why I never really got to be like a hardcore New Japan fan, or never got on Ring of Honor, but like Lucha Underground, the way it presents itself is they know what they are, right? They know that they're a soap opera about a wrestling promotion. Like, it's not necessarily a wrestling promotion per se. So they've got their little mythology down pat, and they've got stories where they know where the end game is, they know what they want to build towards, and then they work backwards. So from there, you establish the continuity, you establish the logic and the storytelling. It's something I really appreciate. So like, sometimes when I'm having a down week, like, oh, you know what, Raw and SmackDown were crap this week, and Lucha Underground, the season's actually ongoing, it makes me look forward to Thursday mornings or Wednesday evenings over there, because that's when I know I actually get quality matches, or a lot of flippy shit, as they would say, that actually have storyline consequences.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm gonna say with NXT, because NXT, while simple, it makes sense to me.
Yeah, absolutely. So, there, that's another great example, right? And like, if it can happen there on NXT, where it's under the same banner, the same umbrella, why can't it happen on the big show? I mean, like, you and I know the answer, right? Like, as long as the old man is there, it's gonna remain the same. But yeah, you know, I think the frustration is. I wouldn't say it's rampant, but I'd say it's shared, I guess, between people like us.
Yeah, yeah. Like, we just want continuity. That's all. Like, we don't want to hear like the old man going, "Oh, well, he feels this way, so it's got to be this way now." Like, how do we get there in the first place then? Right.
I guess, to tie it back to my experience with PWR, it's something I appreciate with the guys that we work with, because the guys mm-hmm. that we work with, a lot of us come from the same point of view. Like, we are smarky as well. And they do say that it's actually better to enter the industry as a smark than as a mark, because you can kind mm-hmm. of understand why things work. Like, let's say you're a wrestler, right? And you come in as a smark. You understand that it's not always about you, so it's not as annoying for you to take the loss. You get what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. if they say, "Oh, you know, Ray, you're gonna put Stan over here," and if you're coming in with a smarky perspective, you're not as bitter about that, because you know you're advancing a bigger story. So in that sense, someone like me who comes in, and, you know, like, I'm a manager, like, I haven't won a match. My clients have never won a match, right? But I don't really bitch about it, because the way I see it is, there's a bigger story we're trying to tell, and we're trying to build to something. And because I know what our end game is, and because we know what points we want to hit, I'm just trying to angle it in such that whatever I do when I'm out there calls back to whatever's happened before and can lay the groundwork for what's about to come.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Storytelling 101. You learned this in like 6th, 7th grade. Sure. First year high school over there in the Philippines or whatever, right?
Sure, but you know, not everybody pays attention to these classes. I mean, you have to some degree, you have to be a stickler for these details for you to actually employ them when you're out there.
Yeah. Jeez. It's like Vince Russo is booking or something. We're not going to leave this show without talking about the NBA Finals Game 2.
Sure.
Yeah, the Warriors are up 2-0. Is this even compelling to you? Because everyone knows how strong the Warriors are. All the Cavs have is LeBron James at this point. You know, Kevin Love's there, but let's face it, he's not the same Kevin Love that he was.
Yeah.
How do you like this?
Okay, I can answer it in two ways. Like, on one hand, I don't think it's compelling, and I think this is the popular opinion, just because it's such a lopsided matchup. It's basically a squash match, kind of like 2007, right? Spurs-Cavs, or 2002, Lakers-Nets. So, you know, the Cavs are overmatched. But at the same time, and I'm pretty sure this is different from when we first did a podcast together all those years ago, I've actually grown to be a LeBron James fan. And as a LeBron fan, I really feel bad for LeBron. Like, there's so much sympathy that I want to send his way, just because he is so overmatched. You know, and you know that he is the best player today. Best player of his generation, and yet he doesn't have enough toys to play with to match up to the Warriors. And, you know, so some people will call me a LeBron apologist. I'd like to think I'm just a LeBron contextualizer. And, you know, people have been taunting me now. Oh, what happened to your LeBron James? What happened to, you know, the future GOAT and all that stuff? And I just think that it's unfair to throw all this crap his way, because when you put up a 51-9-9, what more do you want? Do you want him to like literally spew his guts out and scare the other team away so that they win by forfeit? I mean, it wasn't his fault that JR went out, you know, and you know, looked for Kyrie or whatever. So yeah,
JR said this is my favorite.
Yeah, that was my favorite meme from game one, right? It's like I was watching game two, and you know, while they did keep it close, while the Cavs kept it close, I was like, all right, I think they have another chance here. And then the fourth quarter happened, and I was just so demoralized. And I never thought I could be this sympathetic towards LeBron. Or an underdog for that matter.
Yeah.
So there. For what it's worth, I think we will look back on the last 4 years as still a legit rivalry. And I think in terms of, say, the canon or the storytelling of the league, like when you build its narratives, I think it's still a good thing that you've got a rivalry in the modern era. Because, with all these super teams coming to be, people are saying that there aren't really any rivalries anymore. And then Warriors-Cavs happens. And, you know, in the end, it should be a good thing. It's just that while we're living in the moment, it's hard to appreciate it because it's such a squash match.
Yeah. And people are always unhappy about these sort of things. Back then, people wanted parity. So we got it. And then it's like, oh, well, I miss the dominant teams.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
What do you want? Right? So we're in this thing now where people want more parity, and then you realize how boring it is because everyone's so even or whatever. Yeah, we're just never happy about these sort of things. And
In a way, you can tie it back to wrestling, actually. Right? Because we're never happy about anything. For example, right? You talk about the call-ups. Like, oh, yeah, I want CN to be called up. I want Sanity to be called up. I want the AOP to be called up. And none of them are appearing on TV because there's such a glut of talent. There's a huge logjam, right? So there's not enough time for such a deep roster for everyone to be maximized. So like you can never please everybody. And you know, when you bring it back to the conversation about the NBA, it's just hard to be happy. And I really think it's just easier to appreciate things in hindsight. Like you know how people would be like, oh, you know what? In our day, when the Showtime Lakers faced the Larry Bird Celtics, you know, it was this and that, right? People talk about it much more wistfully.
Yeah. I mean, people would probably hate the Lakers versus Celtics rivalry right now because they were so dominant. And it's like, well, we want someone else to appear. And yeah, again, we're just never happy. So, I don't know. Yeah, I think that's about it. I still remember when you were at Mel 947, you actually did a shout out to me and a certain basketball reporter.
Hey,
I believe 3 years ago.
Yeah.
You played a Westlife song.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is Westlife even big over there? Like, how do people over there know about Westlife?
Oh, well, this certain basketball reporter knew, like, loves Westlife for some reason.
Hey,
like,
wow.
They're not that big over here, but she liked them. I guess she liked listening to, you know, boy bands from the UK or Ireland. So I guess that's her thing. But yeah, I just think that's still pretty hilarious. And I still haven't told her that happened yet. So.
Well, you better tell her before the event turns 5 or something, you know. I would say that's one of my favorite shout outs. Like every time I do a boy band shout out on the air, it always gets a pop out of me. So, you know, I'm always happy to do anyone a solid. You know, now that I work at Wave, which is an R&B and hip hop station, I don't have as many boy band tracks on my playlist. So whenever something comes up and I can just put on a boy band set, I'll just follow it up with a girl band set so I don't get too much flack from the man, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. But I still find it hilarious. So maybe I'll tell her, you'll get an update out of this, I guess. Maybe I'll tell her by the time NBA Summer League comes around. So we shall see. Stan, go ahead and publicize all your works, your social media, whatever else you want to publicize.
Oh, yeah, sure. Thanks. All right. So you can follow me on Twitter and on Instagram. It's at @StanC. You can spell it _STANSY. I appear on a show called D-Day on Fox Sports here in the Philippines occasionally. So, like, I'm one of those recurring subs. So that happens. You can check it out on foxsports.ph. And contrary to how it is over there, the Fox here in the Philippines isn't as right-wing as it is over there. So. Have I told you the story of how? Really quickly before I get to the other plugs, have I told you the story of how I got weird looks at the Celtics Clippers game I attended?
I know you talked, you mentioned meeting Bill Simmons, but other than that, what else happened there?
So I was wearing a media pass, right, that said I was affiliated with Fox Sports in the Philippines, and I would go around, and all the ushers who were Latinos and African Americans, they would look at me all weird, like, why is this Asian dude with a right wing broadcasting company, right? So like somebody actually went up to me and asked me that point blank, and I had to explain, oh, you know what, in the Philippines, Fox isn't actually very political. Like, we're not right wing, we're not right anything, we're not anything, period, right? So they're like, oh, I know, they breathe a sigh of relief. They're like, oh, okay, that's good. So it was just really weird having to explain that situation, getting all those looks from people. So
there. Yeah.
All right, so there's that. I'm on Wave 89.1, Monday to Friday, Philippine time, 7 p.m. So that's like 4 a.m. West Coast time, 7 a.m. East Coast time. The podcast. Hey, it's like having the drive time show, right? We are the drive time show. So there. The podcast, if you want to listen to Filipino takes on pro wrestling, it's called the SGP Podcast. We're on iTunes and on Buzzsprout and wherever you get your local podcasts. And PWR, Philippine Wrestling Revolution, if you're ever in the Philippines and if you ever want to watch some local wrestling, just send me a DM. Let me try to hook you up with seats. Our next show is on June 24. It's a premiere of Season 5, as we like to call it. Respeto is the name of the show, or respect in English. And I'd like to think that some pretty good stories will get off the ground come June 24th. So yeah, That's about it.
I'm not a wrestler, but I am a podcaster, also a hoops writer. Follow me on Twitter at the No Look Pass, and also follow the podcast Twitter at Rayray Is Fun. We can't fit Rayray's Fundamental on the Twitter handle because you only allow 16 characters. You can finally find the show Rayray Is Fundamental on iTunes. It took me so... I was in a battle with iTunes for weeks about why my podcast was removed. And it was just so difficult just dealing with them, and they finally put it back on last week, so I'm happy about that.
Way to put you over.
Yeah, thank you so much, Apple Podcasts. I think that's about it. So for Stan, this is Ray. We are Filipinos, by the way, just in case you don't remember how we are. For some reason they don't. So yeah, we are done here. Thank you so much, guys.
Thanks, man.
Hashtag blame Ray Ray.